Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack our feels about fringe fiction. This week, the fringe fiction is historical fiction, which, I don't know, do you have a certain opinion of that as a genre? Because I haven't really, it's kind of interesting because you've commented that with my taste in literary fiction, it's often fiction that's actually written, like, between the 1900s and like the 60s, 70s. So it's not technically historical fiction because it's not somebody looking back on it. But we went to that one, the book convention where there was people talking about it. And it seems like a type of genre where you kind of take like, oh, this is some historical thing people don't know about. But you're using that kind of as a draw. It's like nobody knows about the subway system of the 1930s and how there was like all this corruption.
Yeah, there was the contest that was there she was talking about. That was neat. I thought that was a neat one. I like that kind of thing. I like ones where they take something different that you didn't know about about a period and develop it. I also just like the romanticism of it. So when I want something fluffy and romantic, I will often read a historical thing.
But I think that's an interesting duality to it.
Yeah. And those are two different types. Like I would almost categorize them separately. There are ones that are very historically accurate. Mm-hmm. And then there's ones that kind of use history as just the window dressing to a story.
Right.
And I like them. I'm fine with either one.
Uh-huh.
I think I prefer the ones that are more historical. Mm-hmm. Just because I like learning about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think as we were watching Nightfall, which is what we're going to talk about this episode, I was kind of thinking about stuff like Vikings that seemed like a very like, oh, this isn't your daddy's
documentary.
Documentary. Like this is a real grimdark version of like, it's like Vikings. Like
yeah.
This is,
I don't know if you saw any of it. I haven't finished watching it yet, but that thing that I was watching about Mars, about traveling to Mars, that was an interesting thing. It was a mixture of actual footage, like current day footage of people making things that they want to get to Mars and like the Mars rover and different people talking about getting there.
Uh-huh.
And then a made up drama about the first crew that goes to Mars.
Right.
So I think people are blending that a lot more now than they used to.
Yeah, I know Nat Geo had been doing a lot of those types of things. I think more of theirs have gone the route of they'll take a celebrity. Like I had watched one that was Morgan Freeman talking about different ideas about God.
Right.
And so he went to different places and it was trying to make it more, I guess what you would call it as like gonzo journalism. Where they like you insert yourself into this culture. So he went and did like he was part of a religious ceremony in India where they, you know, pay tribute to the river. And so like rather than just have this person behind the camera and talking about it, it's somebody that's inserting themselves into it and is showing that I personally am interested in this. So I think that going into this, I was kind of looking at it as it could go one of two ways. It could be in this style of a new, like, because I have somewhat more of a interest now in television because it seems like streaming services are forcing traditional television to kind of, it's kind of like shaking things up. It's disrupting the industry a little bit. And so I thought it could be a little bit more dramatic, or it could be like the things like Vikings and stuff that kind of just made me roll my eyes a little bit because I'm like, it's like these nerds that are really interested in the history of it who are trying to trying to convince you that they know how to write drama. And it seems like it either goes towards that trashy side or that grimdark side of like, you know, they need to decapitate 40 people an episode just to make it seem like it's interesting, but that's not really, I think, what interests people in television. Like, they want a good story. But I was surprised just how good Nightfall was.
So was I. Like, I put it on thinking, oh, okay, fine, it's Nights. I'll just have it on in the background. And then I'm like, what is this show? Of course, then we heard about Mark Hamill, mm-hmm. who is going to be on season 2.
Yes.
So that just kind of sealed it.
But the to get into some of the positive things I liked about it, it introduces Landry, who is the he is part of the Knights Templar. His surrogate father Godfrey is the master of this
group. The local Dukes of Paris
within within Paris, and so what it starts with is Acre, the Battle of Acre, and how there was somebody that betrayed them. And it caused a lot of Christian soldiers to be slaughtered, and people, I guess, Christian people. The Holy Grail was lost because this ship was bombed and it was carrying the Grail. And so the show proper is about finding the Grail. There's all this new intrigue because Godfrey is killed, and it seems like somebody assassinated him on purpose because he knew where the Grail was now and was hiding it from people. And there's this group called the Brotherhood of Light, and you don't know who they are.
Right.
So it's involving mystery and a love story and all these things around the Holy Grail as the MacGuffin. So kind of like a Lord of the Rings-esque type thing. And different people vying for power with the Grail as kind of this symbol of power. But one thing that I really liked about it that we're going to get into a little bit is the really earnest religious characters. So, like, one thing is Landry is talking to the Pope. And the minute I saw who was playing the Pope, I thought, oh, this is Machiavellian, you know, villain number three. Because I've seen him do those.
Oh, I didn't know he did that. I usually think of him as like very nice old guy.
Oh, maybe so, you've seen him in different things. I kind of seen him. I can't even remember a specific example, but just seeing him, I'm just like, you know more than you're talking about. But there was a scene early on where there is some evidence that the Grail might have healed someone. And so he says, do you think it's possible the Grail healed Godfrey's brother? And the Pope says, it's not possible, which is what makes a miracle a miracle. The more you doubt it, the more marvelous the miracle. And so I was used to seeing things like the Tudors and the one about the Mach.
Oh, the Borgias.
Borgias, yeah. I confuse them.
They were very Machiavellian, so that's fine. They would have been proud of that.
Yeah. Like, oh, thank you for the compliment.
Yeah.
I was used to seeing those things like that where all the characters, it feels to me like Game of Thrones kind of inspired that trend of shows
where they're
like
all cynics.
Where everybody is just terrible and they're all trying to kill each other. And there's that intrigue, but you don't really root for anybody within the story. With this,
even the concept that everyone living at the time thought the way we do now, where there's a lot of people now that are very cynical and very, like the assumption is atheism, and right. at the time that wouldn't have been. The fact that one character, the Denogre, is the cynical one in the story, he's the odd one out for that. He's most people at the time would not have thought that way.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so there are certainly characters, that try to use religion as this way, and even then, you I think how he's writing it, you could assume that the Pope and some of these people that are conflating politics with religion, are doing so earnestly, not just because they're terrible.
Right. Not people. Just because, like, they really do believe.
Right.
And at the time, the reason the Pope had the power that he did was because it was political power, and everybody accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't, like, in this country that we purposely divided church and state for reasons, because obviously it caused a lot of problems in Europe to have that as the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, it was accepted practice. The church was very rich and very powerful and had political clout because they're the ones that named the kings. mm-hmm. and they could kick you out if they felt like it, and that could cause serious problems.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, but as a history noob that I am, I enjoyed that it was dramatically setting up these characters, and not everyone was a villain all the time.
Right.
It seems like with a lot of other things, there's a lot of characters who are always trying to scheme, but there were characters that seemed to genuinely be trying to help each right. other.
People that were just trying to do their thing, man. It's like, I have a job, I have a life, I want to do my thing
right.
and be happy, and stuff's getting mm-hmm. him up. That's how it should be. It should be, here's this guy, right? Mm-hmm. Guy has a goal.
Right.
Stuff happens to make his goal crazy and almost impossible.
Right.
And now he has to go take care of that problem right. so that he can get his goal.
And the main character, Landry, part of it has to do with Godfrey's murder, but he's also sleeping with the king's wife, and it genuinely likes her. It's not like he sleeps with her and there's, you know, peace.
Yeah.
Like, he genuinely is in love with her. So what they kind of thread through the first season is he's this person who has dedicated his life to the church, to this Templar order, and he cares about the people of France, cares about the Jews, he tries to help them because they're being persecuted. There's all these things that shows, like, okay, there's my duty versus the life that I want for myself and this woman that I'm in love with. And so it kind of shows that rather than just there being different, like, abstract ideas of duty and love and all these things, they really help you to get to know this person and show, okay, like, if there was somebody who had an affair with the queen, you know, what position would that put him in
right.
as he's thinking about the safety of the people of France? Like, this becomes a genuine fear that he has, and he's trying to think about her safety and, like, okay, so there comes a part where he might have a life with her and might be able to go away to somewhere where they can keep their affair quiet. And so that becomes a genuine way of saying, like, he doesn't want to get involved back in another crusade, not because he's just idealistic and stuff like that. It's he has a genuine, like, life that he wants to hold that is, and that it makes it more easy to believe that this Templar, who is very genuine about his faith and about the Crusades, why he would all of a sudden be trying to find this way for peace and for the ground right. not to be the symbol of taking war, over the world.
But no, yeah, yeah. They do. They do a really good job with character arcs, especially his, and making their choices believable,
mm-hmm.
even though they do some shocking choices.
Uh-huh.
The characters make some shocking choices. They're choices that I could see those characters making.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the teenage girl,
uh-huh.
Little Miss Princess of France.
Yeah, so let's get into that, where there's dramatic moments, and then there's some moments where things seem a little bit more melodramatic. So I think that there's different times. Like, one of the strongest things to me was the relationship between Tancred and Landry as brothers, where he thinks that Tancred betrayed the order. He thinks he's committed this heinous crime within a temple.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, I'm going to punish you. And there was this understanding between them that, unlike another character who feels betrayed and is being bitter about it, there's this time where they show scenes with them where it's like, unless you renounce this crime, then this is the way that things have to go. And then there's this very, like, this, like, almost like a hazing scene where, like, they're punching Tancred and, like, they're saying, I won't repent.
The gauntlet.
Right. And that becomes, like, a metaphor for him to say, like, I don't want to, Tancred doesn't want the Grail to be a symbol of war anymore either. But there's something specific that happens to him where he joins the Brotherhood of Light. You get that there's this thing, and it comes to the point where he willingly, like, I thought that was a really good dramatic moment where they set up that he has this relationship with his brother where he tries to help him, but also he sees that, like, you need to be the leader, and he keeps trying to convince him
yeah.
that, like, you can take Godfrey's place in within the temple. And so a lot of that really felt like good. And like you were saying, it shows this heroic masculinity that's not it's not unearned. Like you see that they're from the beginning, they're very brotherly. And so when he puts him in stocks, it's not like automatically like, you know, you expect him to want to betray him and take his place and everything.
Like, no. And it's like Tancred made those choices knowing that was his consequences. Mm. Like, it wasn't like, oh, this is unfair, I thought you'd let me get away with it.
Right.
Like the other guy was asking, the bitter one. His was more of a, yeah, I know you're going to do this, and I know you have to do this because this is your job, but I'm still sticking to my thing. Right. And, you know, it was hard to watch, but it was good. Well
and,
done.
And it kind of reminded me of like what two brothers would be like really in like a military order like that. Like if you're in this military
and you've seen this, you've helped, you know, saved each other's lives on occasion and seen each other at your worst, you know, that's the kind of relationship you would have.
Right. But then there's things like we've been talking about how there's a lawyer character named Denagare, who is the weasel worm tongue type character.
All of the above.
And he's trying to get power for himself. He's you know, utterly selfish. But there's a scene where his uncle comes out of the shadows, and like this is it's like an ensemble show. So I'm just kind of
so there's a lot of people, and I'm like, did we miss it? Do we supposed to know who that guy is? Who is that guy?
And so I think that there are some moments just because of how fast paced the show is, and just how complex it is.
That's true. It is very fast.
Yeah, that there are lines that might be a little clunky. There might be some visual choices that you're just unsure about. But overall, I think the cinematography is really
very pretty. They do some really lovely scenes. Some of it.
There was a. There were some visual storytelling things that I liked where like you,
oh, that's true. There's a lot of things that you have to see. Mm-hmm. You can't put this on and expect to hear whatever's going on. They don't point it all out all the time.
Right.
They're not like exposition dumping you. You have to have seen it in the scene for it to make sense.
Like for example, there's a scene with, there was a note earlier on where there's a Roman numeral, and then there's a scene where he sees on the soldier's armor Roman numerals. And he makes that like, two and two.
Or the orange thing. Mm-hmm. That was well done.
Right. And those are things that say, and that's where I feel like if you're reading a literary fiction novel, that becomes powerful when you have somebody that's a master of the visual storytelling craft, where they can put something that sits in the back of your mind, and then when you see it,
then you're like, oh, there it is.
You know, there's that thing versus something that just seems like a stage play that you could be transcribed that way and you wouldn't lose anything. Like you want a visual medium to be able to have those things that make it feel like, oh, I'm glad that I'm watching this as a TV show because, oh, I spotted that thing. And like when I first saw the orange, I thought it was a rubber ball. And I'm just like, did they even have rubber?
Like, what is that thing? Somebody forgot their ball on the set.
But it was a really cool, like, kind of eerie thing. That's like, why is this thing just at a place like that? And it turns out to be a symbol of the Brotherhood of Light. So that's some of the good things. We'll talk a little bit more about what we liked about this show.
Oh, I found out the name to call this thing. Where before we break.
Uh-huh.
The mid-roll.
Oh, very good.
There you go. So, we'll be back after the mid-roll.
Now that we know the correct industry term. We'll be back.
So I'm not allowed to feel bad for having books, but I am not allowed to feel good for doing a sit-up.
You beat me to the to
just
the
so punch. You know. Well, I know because he was going to say it, and I didn't want him to say
it. Not what I was going to say. but I'm very glad that you want sympathy from our audience, because I doubt you're going to get it.
Nope.
I was going to say another funny line. There's a character that's... Okay, so... There's somebody in here that's plotting, right? And he does a lot of sneaky things.
Sneaky things.
But one of his henchmen gets his head cut off and shipped back to him. So the character that did that says, I don't lose my head, or the head of men who work for me. And I was like, that's good.
Uh-huh.
That's good.
This is my mantra for this show is don't mess with Spain. Because yeah, most of the people involved are French and Englishmen, but man, do not mess with Spain.
That's a good segue into our organic inclusion note here, because that was a good subplot that kind of fit in with the rest of the show. And there's different things like that that are not, like, they thread in the fact that Joan's cousin is Catalonian.
Yes.
And there's this feud that she has with her that comes to a head within the first season.
Joan being the Queen of France.
Right. You kind of get that Joan has her own arc. You know, Landry is in love with her, but I liked that she had a lot to do within the first season, and her daughter as well. Her part of the first season is also that her daughter is being suited by England and Catalonia, and so she's trying to make it so that at first she's in love with Luis, who's from Catalonia, and she wants to marry for love, not just so that they have stronger ties with England. So there's a lot of things that are, and I thought it was an interesting balance, because obviously the women during this time didn't have the same type of power.
Right.
There was a kind of power and a kind of influence that they have within the court, and they did a good job of, and I'd say the same for, there's one Jewish
girl
yeah. that early on seems like she's trying to buck tradition. She wants to be able to talk to the Templars, and like her father's just like, sit down.
Yeah, stop it.
Calm down. But then later on, she's like trying to fight one of the bad guys, and it's not like she's winning.
No, but like, she's not giving up either.
But right, yeah, but she cares about these people because they protected her. And then she has this kind of organic thing that developed between her and one of the characters. So I thought that as far as women are concerned, it was positive in the sense that it showed them and how their lives are. And they didn't just have to be like static tertiary characters.
Right.
They like had depth to them.
But at the same time, like, okay, so we're going to talk about some of the other balances that this show has later on as well. But I like the balance that they have between, yes, they're showing that these are powerful women, because the women, most of the women, the Jewish lady isn't, but the many of the female characters are in positions of power, which is why they have the ability to do as much as they're doing.
Uh-huh.
But even, like, the queen's handmaiden gets into some trouble as well. So they do a good job of showing a balance between, yes, women had position, yes, women could do things, there was influence going on, but at the same time, it wasn't pushing it to the level of, you know, they're expecting their independence, or they're thinking like modern women would, like a lot of shows tend to try and...
They try
to put a very modern mindset into historical people. And I'm not saying that historical people, actual people... were that different than us. They had the same wants and the same feelings and the same motivations as we have now. But the world was very different then.
Right.
And they would not have thought of those things then, because they were not possible then.
Right.
Like, as much as Queen Joan wanted to do a lot of the things that she was going to try and do, and had some ability to do that because she had her own lands, she was a queen in her own right. It wasn't just because she married the king.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she is still in the position she's in, and there is only so much she is able to do.
Right.
And she would not have, she doesn't think that, oh, I have the right to X thing, because she knows as a woman she can't have that place.
Right.
Not that she doesn't want those abilities or those things. It's just, I don't know. It's a different mindset.
Uh-huh. Well, I just feel like I know Game of Thrones is fantasy, but in terms of dealing with some of the same medieval things, I feel like there were a lot of critics too that were talking about the Sansa being somebody that you know, she starts out as being very selfish, and she kind of believes this lie of if I move up in society and in power, then I'll be happy, right? But it doesn't really, the unlike with Daenerys's story arc, they don't really give her much to do over the course of the seven seasons right. that we've gotten. It's just kind of like, we're going to punish this person for being so naive.
Right.
And then there were a lot of people that, myself included, that were like tortured by the fact that she got captured by this guy and just, there's another character raping a woman.
Yeah.
And that's all this character gets to do, is be raped for this whole season. I was interested in her being more of a character than right, just
than that. Just what she was.
And
I was surprised they did it, because there's other characters in Game of Thrones that are given, even though it's still obviously a very misogynistic society, mm-hmm. There's other female characters that are given tons to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love Lady Brienne,
mm-hmm.
because even though most people would think of her as, well, you're just a woman, mm-hmm. she's still an amazing fighter and can kick a lot of people's butt in that show.
But I think
and
I think
has
that's
a position because of it.
Is that it either, in these medieval things, either a woman is a power fantasy that can kick people's butts, or they're like Cersei, they're terrible, and
right.
they're killing a bunch of people indirectly.
Right. Or they're there to be punished and brutalized.
Right.
But I think Nightfall does a, like I said, great job of balancing the fact that these are still human beings, they're still have influence in certain ways, they're still able to do more than just be one of those three stereotypes.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's nuance to the multiple female characters. There's ones like the Jewish girl that's trying to be a fighter because her people are under threat. But then there's somebody like Joan who at different times knows how to be diplomatic, knows to and has a heart and is trying to show
right.
that heart to people, inspire the people that she rules, and have that voice that her husband is too busy not having. And then when she needs to,
then there's the ninja.
Oh yeah,
I'm not really quite sure what I think about that one yet.
Well, that's interesting because they just kind of flirted
yeah,
with
she
her
only
being
just like
part
pops
of it.
In and out occasionally.
And I think it's realistic in the sense that, like, for all we know, she's just a mercenary.
Yeah,
but she keeps being too cool to just
yeah
be
to just
where
be some random mercenary number two.
She's like Mulan.
Yeah, basically.
For all intents and purposes.
I don't know.
A Chinese.
We should just call her that, because I don't even know what her name is. So Mulan
yeah.
pops in now and then.
Yeah, there's...
who also wants the girl for reasons I don't understand.
Right. Yeah, she's going to be a character later
She
on
has to be. Because they
develop more.
There's a big reveal at the end about the Grail that I will not tell you, because mm-hmm. we've already spoiled enough of the show.
Because you need to watch the show. No, I think we've been pretty good. I said that the Brotherhood of Light is a thing, but otherwise... So yeah, so very organic inclusion. I'll also say that there's a Arabic, maybe Jewish. But that, I think that's the point, though.
Yeah, they don't specify.
It doesn't address
really matter that much to them.
That this, yeah, that there's. It's just the person who
he's
is obviously
doctor.
Converted.
That's why.
Yeah,
because he's obviously very intelligent and knows stuff,
mm-hmm.
and actually knows how to, like, you know, have you not die when you've been stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
Which
right.
most,
so
of,
it's
most
somebody,
of medieval Europe couldn't figure out.
It's somebody as a character who's very competent and who a lot of characters rely on within the show. And so as opposed to having that person, A, just be on screen, you know, like he's like in the background
right.
doing some stuff, and then that's inclusion, or him being a power fantasy character who's like, you know... like so, like they're kind of flirting with the fact that there's somewhat of a, like, the Brotherhood of Light could be something that has multiple faiths involved in
yeah.
it. They're just showing that realistically there were characters that converted to Christianity and didn't necessarily hate the people that they were working with.
Right. Oh, that's true, because he doesn't bring that up either. Like, I hadn't even thought about it till John brought up the fact that, oh yeah, you know, the one Arab guy that's part of the, I'm like, wait, what? Oh, you mean the doctor guy?
Oh, right, because then I was referencing a part where he spoke Arabic
yeah.
to the one guy, but then I think that there's another scene where there's a, what these people call Saracens, what the Pope calls a Saracen, tries to corner him, and I think brings up, like, why are you working with these people? And so that organically brings that up as a conflict. Like, but he respects the people that he worked with, and the show has earned the fact that they're worthy of respect and that they're genuinely this, like, warrior monk order that isn't just doing whatever the Pope tells them to do and all this stuff. So you get that, like, oh, if they're treating Jews like this, where they're trying to protect them from Christians that are trying to attack. And that, yeah, that's one of the funniest things, is that the townspeople are kind of like Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
French people were like, they're happy at one minute, and then all of a sudden it's like, kill the beast. Like, you know, I think that's a very realistic thing of, like, they're just making fun of Jews and saying how they're the devil and stuff like that. But then the Crusaders, they kind of bring up a motto at the beginning, is that protecting people on their pilgrimage.
Yeah.
And that idea of, like, them being some people that would protect the Jews, and that it's not necessarily a sectarian thing, that it's like, oh, we protect just Christians.
Right.
And that, you know, they're,
like, they protect, they're being truly chivalrous.
Right.
They're protecting the defenseless.
Right.
Right. Anybody who's too weak to defend themselves.
So yeah, I think this might be a shorter episode.
Yes.
Because,
but I did want to bring up chivalry really quick, but yeah.
Genuinely, it seems like when you like a thing, you don't want to go on and on about it. You just want people to go and see it.
Just go watch it.
So go
watch
it.
And we want season two.
And talk to us about it.
Where is season two?
it's a week away. It's fine.
Okay. I can wait a week.
Maybe.
I'm going to, when I put up this episode, I'll be like, Mark Hamill, where is season two?
So what were you going to say?
Just briefly about the chivalry shown in
In
there. Because they don't really go into the descriptions of it or anything. Like some shows about knights, they have them like show off the oath or something about becoming a knight and things like that. So they never really outwardly say that code, really.
Okay.
At least I haven't noticed it. I mean, they do talk about what the order was founded for.
Mm-hmm.
But just the kinds of ceremonies that they show, that they do with each other,
mm-hmm.
the people that they show defending,
mm-hmm.
The way that they behave towards each other, towards the poor, towards women, towards anybody,
mm-hmm.
is very, very chivalrous. Like, it has to do with you knowing you are in a place of strength,
mm-hmm.
and not abusing that place of strength.
Oh, okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So they know as a knight, they could probably take anybody. Like, my one favorite line is, like, they're getting ready because they know they're about to get attacked by a bunch of mercenaries. And the guy's like, they're sending mercenaries against us. And everybody laughs. Like, they're just like, and what's that going to do? Absolutely nothing. We got this.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they're good at what they do. And they know that they are equipped in a way because they're wealthy enough or whatever to take on whatever is coming at you. Especially when you get into the area of, like, mounted knights. A knight on a horse was, like, insanely impossible to knock down unless you happen to also be a knight on a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that you have that kind of power and not abuse it was the idea of what chivalry was. It's like, you know you're a man, you could probably hurt any woman around you, but you are not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It is honorable, more honorable for you to show deference to these weaker people. And I think they do a good job of showing that without making it, like, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say that I think that's an excellent point, and it's something that certainly at the time would have been a code that they followed, right? But it's almost like, you know, when you get a history lesson about what's in the Declaration of Independence, and then you think, a lot of these people own slaves.
Yeah.
So I think what's good about this show is that it shows that there are people who dedicate their life to this thing and mean it.
Yeah.
And really believe that God makes them more powerful when they fight.
But still make mistakes.
Right.
Like, they're not, it's not to the point where, like, oh, well, obviously this guy's always going to win because he's the honorable chivalrous one. No. Mm-hmm. Landry goes through a lot of crap.
And there's a lot of flaws
that
they have. That throughout the course of the show, there's different dramatic moments where they actually, like, at the end, he's being accused of being an adulterer, and he really has to face the mistakes that he's made and the people that he's put in danger because of those mistakes. but it doesn't, it does a good job of showing, like, this is what these people say that they're for. Watch them try to learn how to fight for that and learn, you know, how to do that in a way in the real world of the, so it's not completely cynical, but right, it's not completely complete whitewashing, right, and rewriting of history.
Yeah.
So definitely check it out. It's on Netflix.
Netflix.
Right now.
The Netflix.
Also, it's a Czech American production.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. That's
History and A&E.
Yeah, the History Channel and A&E are doing it, which I think is a brilliant combination, and I hope they do more things because this is really good.
But yeah, it's a really good production. I think that that there's a lot of large scale battles towards the end of the first season.
Yes.
And it shocked me how they were able to handle, like, the production value of it and use cinematography to make the fight, because, like, we're used to seeing something like Game of Thrones that has this huge budget, and it was really good at using the sets that they. That's another awesome thing.
Oh, about man, show. I don't know where they filmed this stuff, but the locations and the castles that they go to are amazing. Yeah,
really cool looking, like real castles.
And all the costumes. You should hear me go on about the ladies' dresses. It's terrible, but they look beautiful.
Yeah, obviously, I don't want to hear that. But there's those of you,
well, those of you into historical costuming.
Yeah,
some gorgeous stuff.
At Mom Toast.
Yes. at Mom Toast underscore Mel on Twitter. If you want to talk about historical costuming, because I can go on forever.
I'm at John Matos Writer on all things. You can write to us about this show, or next week we're going to be talking about Get Out, and we're going to be either and or filming and recording.
We were talking about us.
What?
I thought we were talking about the movie Us.
Yeah, no, we're gonna do that. You
said Get Out.
Oh,
wrong one. Same person, same director.
I was confused because I was also moving on to. We're gonna be talking about Captain Marvel.
Oh yes.
With
some special guests, hopefully.
Yes. If you want to write us about that, you can hit us up at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com or at unboxing story on Facebook and the tweet stores. Also at anchor.fm/unboxing-story. That's our main home. That's where we live, like Yoda and Dagobah. But also, if you want to support us, you can go onto there and subscribe at varying degrees to support the show, because we'd love to see you guys at, like, conventions.
Yes.
And we also have our own writing that we'd like to facilitate with that. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again later.
Bye.